Hello, and welcome to Sobercast. We provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in a podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Also, if you're a member of NA or have friends that are, please tell them about our other podcast, NAPOD. NAPOD features NA speakers and workshops in the same format as Sobercast. We upload a new speaker every day, and it's easy to subscribe by searching for NAPOD, N-A-P-O-D, all one word, on any podcast player app, or go to napod.xyz if you'd like to listen online. Hope you enjoy the podcast and have a great day.
Wanted to wake Bill up. This is a workshop on sponsorship, sponsored by the North County Central Office. The questions that were handed out to you are not significant at all, except that they are questions that are asked a great deal around the fellowship and in the fellowship. Some of them are important and some of them probably are not important at all. They don't constitute a format for the meeting or anything like that. They were simply put out as a means of kind of jogging people's mind about sponsorship. You might use the questions listening to the speakers, applying them where they fit, or you might want to bring them up in the discussion. The format of the meeting has been designed to go as follows. We'll have the two speakers will speak each between 30 and 40 minutes. Then, without a coffee break, each table will constitute, each number table and non-number table will constitute a discussion group with a facilitator who just kind of, in other words, then we want everyone at this meeting to share your opinions, your questions with one another. That will be about another half an hour. That will leave about, depending, you know, between 15 minutes and a half an hour for if there is anything about in the discussion that you have with your discussion group that just seems insoluble or a question that was really wanted to ask either of the speakers or any of the old timers in the room, then you would be expected for your facilitator that you pick to come up to the mic and ask the question after the discussion period. It is my intention that the meeting should end at 3:30. If anyone has to leave before that, well, then they'll have to leave. But I would think 2 hours in a stuffy room would be enough for anyone. But we'll see what happens then. But I had figured the meeting to go until 3:30. Would you join me in the serenity prayer, please? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Sponsorship, there's about 260 people in the room, I imagine. If it's like anything else in Alcoholics Anonymous, there are 260 opinions about sponsorship. And that's what a sharing session is all about. A kid who got a 90-day token the other night described his sponsor as his fixed point. And that terminology fascinated me. You know, it's a navigational term, and I thought it was a rather interesting way to put it. There's the term a fixed point also is kind of interesting that sometimes geese or ducks have a fixed point. They're born, the first thing they see becomes their mother. And they imitate that. And I think perhaps if you reflect, your ideas about sponsorship probably have to do with how you were sponsored when you came into this fellowship. I know mine are. So keep that in mind, and the idea is in the sharing today is to be open-minded. Not that anyone's going to change their mind about anything. Perhaps you will, perhaps you won't, but that's certainly not the intention here. It's simply to share ideas. Now, there are two separate, probably distinct groups here, at least today. One group are people who are being thrust into sponsorship, whether they want it or not. People are asking them to sponsor. And they're worried about that, and they don't know if they can do it. And then there are other people who are here today, I know, who are getting ready to be sponsored. And of which is the most painful, I don't know, really. But that's That's roughly the kinds of people here today. And so you, of course, in your discussion groups will want to share, you know, identify which side of the fence you're on right here today. We have two, I would not guess that anywhere in Alcoholics Anonymous could you find two people better qualified to speak in the area of sponsorship. Both of them have certainly done their share. I asked Sybil whether she wanted to speak first or second, because the sponsorship I was raised in, seniority counts. Sybil decided she'd like to go second, so if there's any insults, she can protect herself. For those of you who've been in Mongolia somewhere who don't know Sybil, Sybil has the longest sobriety of any woman in Alcoholics Anonymous in California, and perhaps second in the United States, I don't know.
And probably because I had the work to do. If I had come to Alcoholics Anonymous and no one had ever paid any attention to me, I had no feeling of pride in my life. I had no ego left at all. It would have been better if I'd had a little ego. But I had no self-respect. I was filled with shame and remorse. I felt I couldn't tell anyone there my story. And there weren't any women to talk to. And eventually it nearly killed me because I had so much bottled up, and I called Frank Randall and talked to him, and Cliff Walker, and I talked to him. Because at my very first meeting, they put me in charge of the women, and the women came in droves. Well, how could I go to one of these new people and say, look, I have a terrible problem, and you know, I want you to solve it for me or help me solve it. I couldn't do it. I was a very shy person. I couldn't talk at meetings. I couldn't participate. I couldn't, a mic, I think it would have killed me. I think a microphone would have absolutely killed me. And I went on like that for months, and my brother Tex was sober, and he said, you're stubborn, Sib. You're my sister. I know you. You're going to stay sober forever. But you're going to be a miserable human being because you will not participate in any way in AA. Yeah, you make 12-step calls, but you won't participate. You haven't stood up in any downtown one night. You got up and gave your name because Frank Randall said, we have a woman now that's been sober 4 months. Stand up, Sybil. And I did. And I said, my name is Sybil. I've been sober 4 months. And I sat down. And I didn't sleep for a week. It nearly killed me. And Tex said, you got to get over it. You've got to participate like the others because of the hole in the ground. Everybody talked. Everybody talked. And finally one night he said, I'm going to fix it this way, and I'm going to try it this once, and it's got to work. Now we're going to go down there before a human being comes along. And then, as John comes in, you say, hello, John. And when Mary comes in, say, hello, Mary. They're friends of yours. You've known them from the day they got sober. And pretty soon there'll be 12 or 15 or maybe 20. And then you will have talked to them all for an hour and a half. And when the meeting comes to order, I'll just say, Sib, come on up here and give us a 3-minute talk. And he says, it'll be so easy because you'll just continue to do what you've been doing for an hour and a half, and that's talking to your friends. And he forced me to do that, thank God. And I did get up, and my eyes filled with tears, and my nervous tic came back, and my lip jerked, and that was a terrible thing for me for 3 or 4 months after I got sober. And my voice shook, and I read something out of the book and commented on it. I don't know what. And sat down, and those 25 people gave me a round of applause that lasted to me, it seemed like forever. I felt like I was in the Coliseum. And then I began to smile a little bit, and I thought, my God, was I really that good? If I'm that good, I better go home and read that big book, and I'll memorize a whole chapter, and maybe the downtown mother group will let me talk there someday. And I had to fight that battle. Forevermore, until I went to work in the central office. Oh, sure, I went around with Tex and talked a little bit here and there when I was asked. It hurt, and I tried to cover it up with a phony smile, but I had to do it because I would regress very quickly and become that frightened, scared person that would sit in the back and maybe drift out into the shadows and die. And it was a long time before I was able to talk. But I was sponsoring people, and I do today. Now, fortunately for me, I'm not as young as the rest of you. I say in this respect, I'm 74 years old. And when Bob gets a new baby, He will say to them, yes, I'll be your sponsor, but I'll have to throw Sybil in with the deal, too. We live in the same house, and they'll say, okay. So, you know, we're told that women work with women and men work with men, but when Bob gets a new baby, I get a share of them. There's one John, there's one Mac, and there's one Gary, and I'm half their sponsor, see? They get two sponsors for the price of one. And I work with women, too. But to my great grief and sorrow, the women that came in the early days didn't stick around very long. And I think I know the reason why. Because I felt the way they did, I'm sure. Alcoholism hadn't been heard of much. For a woman to be a woman drunk and not take care of her children, not keep the house up or do the meals, and disappear for 3 or 4 days at a time and come back and promise never to do it again, and then do it again, and again, and again, for 17 years as I did. They were like me, those women, and they were ashamed of it. And it's different now. We were actually so ashamed of it, we couldn't talk about it to each other. And the women didn't hang around. I had very few women that would call me up, say, I want to talk to you about my life. I've got something that's eating at me, and I can't sleep nights, and I haven't told a soul, but I got to talk about it. We didn't do it. We didn't do it. I look back on it, and I think perhaps it's because that my brother Tex was always available, and there was always one woman that I could finally maybe give her just a little idea of what was wrong with me. But these women didn't tell me their stories in depth, and today we do. And I tell almost everything that I can remember about myself from the podium. But we felt really bad that we had been drinking the way we did and that we had lost everything and had lost our self-respect. And we just simply, when called on, would say, my name is Mary or my name is Sybil, and I drank for 17 years, and I'm an alcoholic, and thank you very much. You just didn't tell them anything, really. And that was a bad thing. It was a very bad thing. But now our lives are an open book. Alcoholics Anonymous is a thing that everyone seems to know about, and they come in at all ages. You've seen kids come in at 12 and 13 years old, and I sponsor one of those. And you've seen others who come in. I met a lady in Englewood Monday night, 83 years old, and she's been sober 30 days. A lovely person. Just a beautiful lady. And I was so glad that I got to see her in her sobriety. And I hope she lives to be 100, but I hope for myself, too. But along those days, at the hole in the ground, I was always for the helpless, hopeless, and Tex would sneer at me about that, and he'd say, oh, that phony so-and-so, he'll never make it. Oh, Tex, how can you say that? And then a woman would come along that I particularly admire, and I'd say, oh, she's doing a good job, I'm so proud of her, and I'd be taking her to the meetings, you know, and Tex said, I don't know why you can't see it, Sib, she'll be drunk by Sunday. Well, he was usually right. But we had one day that was brought to our house, one of the helpless hopeless. Tony Lubin brought him to my house, and Tex was upstairs in bed, and he was not feeling too well. He'd had this heart condition for a long time, and some days he could be up, and some days he could not. And Tony Lubin brought this guy into my house, into the kitchen, and whispered to me, make him a cup of coffee, he's in bad shape. And I did. And I noticed this guy was shaking so badly that he could not drink that coffee, but he had to put his mouth down to the coffee cup just to get a little of it, you know. And then Tony took him upstairs to my brother, and they talked a while. And then we found out that his mother had made the call, and Tony had gone down to see this boy. And he lived about 4 blocks from the hole in the ground. But this fellow wouldn't shape up. He would get drunk. And his mother would call up and say, Mr. Adams. She never said Tex like the others. Mr. Adams, my son is missing again. Tex would say, don't you worry, Mrs. Watson. We'll find him. And for her sake, he'd tell me, look around at me and say, three of the group. Now, listen, I'm doing this. And he would get a couple of guys, and they'd search, and they'd search, you know, and they'd find him, and they'd come dragging him back to the hole in the ground, unwillingly, sort of, and he'd there a spell. And then he wouldn't show up, and then he'd get the phone call. Mr. Adams, I hate to bother you, but my son is missing again. And he'd say, Sid, get Tom Murphy and Velta and go find him. And I'd say, oh, Tex, again? He'd say, yeah, promised the lady we would. Can't hurt. We'd go get him, and we'd drag him back. And we tried everything. Now, this went on the whole last year that Tex lived. And finally, Tex, in desperation, made this guy the secretary of the... He says, I'm going to make you secretary of the group. Now you've got responsibilities, and you've got to stay sober. Well, did he? Well, the last year of Tex's life, he did. Thank God. And Tex got to watch him stay sober. And then Tex left, and this guy stayed sober after that, although I didn't think he would. And he began to think about his life and that it was valuable. He had cerebral palsy, and still has, of course. And he had to him what he thought was a disfiguring eye that had a problem with it. He couldn't close it. And maybe he thought he wasn't handsome. Maybe he thought he wasn't a lady killer. I don't know. But he had ambition, and he had the desire to stay sober, and he went to school at night and went to college, and he took courses. And while he worked as a janitor at the city hall, and he went to school nights. And when he thought he was ready, and this took several years. Now, in the meantime, I'm working in the central office, and a lot of years has gone by, and he has a room down the street at 13th and Union, and we call him up and give him 12-step calls, and he walks for miles because he can't drive. And we give him calls every day. Evelyn give him one, Carol would give him one, and I'd give him one. He'd walk, then he'd go see him. And he never turned down a drop, whether they were drunk or sober. He didn't care. But he was staying sober. And eventually, after he got his education, he had the desire to get a really fine job, and he went to work for the IRS. And he worked there for many, many years. And this other little thing that touches me that nobody else would pay too much attention to, when he got sober on Christmas, he always ordered See's candy for Tex, and then his widow, and Tex's four kids, and to me, and to my daughter. My daughter and my son-in-law are here today. They came down from Hollister. Every year, Addie would call me up and say, because she sent us 3 pounds of candy, and still does. I don't know how many gratitude boxes of seized candy, hundreds and thousands of dollars have been spent on that. And Addie will call me up about December the 10th and say, Mama, did you get your candy? No, I haven't, honey. Well, what do you think? Well, I think we'll get it. And we do. Well, the last 5 or 6 years, this guy has been coming to our house for the holidays. He moved to Brawley. He retired from IRS with diplomas and plaques, the most valued employee and everything like that. This helpless, hopeless man. And he's here today. I love him like a brother, and I think of him as a brother. So does my daughter, and so does Bob. And his name is Ty Watson. Will you stand up, Ty, please? The reason that I'm glad that when anyone calls for help, how can I really judge or know whether they're going to make it or not? I don't know how. I saw one of the questions, when do you fire a sponsoree? And that to me is a baby. And when does the baby fire the sponsor? I don't know. I don't know all those questions. I more or less go by instinct. I just like to give the kindness and the love that was given me, and it isn't in my nature usually to be tough, but I can be. When the chips are down, and I'll think about it long enough, I can be tough if it's a matter of life or death. I'll have to call a shot, maybe the last measure of, I'll have to say it, whether it's good or bad, and be honest about it, and I will say it to a baby if I can just get them, you know, just please get well. And I'll tell them. But it's hard for me to do that because it hurts me, probably doesn't hurt them. But I'm more or less an easy sponsor. But I never want a day to come in Alcoholics Anonymous when I will refuse a call. We don't get as many anymore. And I'm sorry about that. I sort of enjoyed seeing people come to Alcoholics Anonymous in sort of dirty clothes and maybe unshaven. Or a girl with an old pantsuit on and her hair like mine was. I had to wear a turban or a scarf and tuck my hair up under it for a month or two because I couldn't comb my hair. And I looked very bad. And if the girls were wearing their dresses long, mine would happen to be short from the fashion before. And if they were wearing them short, my skirts were long. And if my coat had a rip in the lining, I would get a safety pin and pin it together. And one day, a woman by the name of Alma Majora came over to my house, and she said, do you have a needle and thread? I said, what for? Well, she said, I want to mend your coat before the meeting Friday night. And it nearly killed me. to realize, well, here I am, I'm throwing that coat on the back of the chair and have been for several months. I don't care about the rich. I didn't care about myself. And I always told them that I didn't care. When I first came, when Frank Randall came out to see me, and then later on Cliff Walker, I said, I don't care about myself. If I die, that's okay with me. I haven't anything good to remember. I wouldn't be sober now in AA if it wasn't for my baby. She was 7 or 8 years old at that time. And they say, Sybil, don't talk like that. You can't stay sober for a child. I said, I can't. And I said that, you know, and I said it and said it and said it. And, of course, I finally got the drift of it, and I quit saying it. But I want to tell you, a thrill of a lifetime, and this is the strangest thing for a member of AA to say, was when I was in Grants Pass a couple of months ago, and Bob called me and said, your daughter just called me and said she got her 30-day chip. She and my son-in-law went to AA the first of April, first week in April, and I didn't even know she drank. That's true. And when Bob told me this good news, because the motel operator said, your husband called and said he has very good news and for you to call him at once. And so I called him, and I said, what's the good news? And he said, your daughter called me, and she got the 30-day chip. And there was a silence, because I had to sort it out. When did she work? She never lived in Los Angeles with me since she got married. I didn't know what was going on up in Hollister, California, where all the earthquakes are. I knew they raised 5 kids, and they're both gone. And so they decided they'd come down this weekend and be here today, which they are. And this is the first time I've ever been in an AA hall with my daughter and son-in-law. That is absolutely fantastic. Is very good news indeed. Do you know what I'm about to do? I'm about to sit down because you know what I like the best of all outside of listening to Clancy? It's the question and answer period. Would you let me sit down now? I love you so much. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.